Welcome to the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Thomas from Irish Illustrated, and joining me today is Tom Loy, our esteemed recruiting insider, our esteemed recruiting expert from 247 Sports. Tom, how are you doing today, brother?
Doing great. Eric, always a pleasure, man. Always good to catch up with you and obviously talk Notre Dame football, man. It's always fun.
Absolutely, man. Well, hey, it's great to have you on. And we're going to do something a little bit different than the usual insider stuff today. We're going to be focusing entirely on recruiting. And we thought it would be a great opportunity with signing day just passed. We're kind of getting into the flow of the 2027 offseason. We thought it would be a good time to kind of put the final touches on that hall of talent that just signed and many of the cases enrolled at Notre Dame. So we'll kind of kick it off with you know, the guys who just got on campus here and some of those names. I want to start with the defense, Tom. When I look at this Notre Dame 2026 class, the very first thing that catches my eye is that elite talent at the top of the class on the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, you got guys like five-star Rodney Dunham. You got three top 100 defensive backs. When you're kind of looking at, you know, that top end talent, that top shelf in this class, what jumps to mind about the bona fide playmakers that are coming to South Bend?
I mean, Rodney Dunham is one of my favorite prospects in the entire 26 recruiting class. I mean, we obviously did his commitment with 247 Sports and CBS Sports. I got to go down to Myers Park High School, Charlotte, North Carolina, and just kind of get around him and his family and the coaching staff down there. It's just fun to see how much love everybody had for Rodney Dunham. I mean, we were for a while an outlier when it came to his recruitment. We named him a five-star. We named him one of the top players in the entire country. And you get around him and you just knew, like, this is a Notre Dame kid all the way. He just checks every box for the type of prospect that Marcus Freeman, Mike Martin, and the rest of the guys at Notre Dame are looking for and recruiting. So the kid is incredibly talented, a special, special prospect. He looks the part. Would have loved to see him in like a postseason All-Star game, but it just didn't work out. But man, the upside for this kid is through the roof. I'm fired up about him. But he jumps out. And as you kind of go down the list, I mean, another one, again, another Notre Dame kid, Joey O'Brien, a guy you know well, you know, I know well. I know Carter Ahman, the Notre Dame director of recruiting, knows well, as right from where he's from, his backyard. And just another incredible kid and just a freak of nature on the back end at safety. He could play corner, he could play safety, he could play wide receiver. Doesn't really matter. You just know when Joey O'Brien's out there, he's going to be making plays. So really excited about him. I know he was right on the cusp of that fifth star, had it, kind of fell off and ended up being like 39th, I believe, in the entire country, right inside the top 50. And just, you know, big picture, Joey O'Brien is incredibly talented. He is. There's so much to like. One of my favorite moments of the entire cycle was calling him and telling him I wanted to interview him for something on camera for one of our shows. And he was so excited, right? Like, he was just fired up about it. He just loved the interactions. One of my favorite prospects. And then to surprise him and tell him, like, hey, we're naming you a five-star. He was just, you can see him light up ear to ear. It's what he wanted. He earned it. And whether it was the high school level, whether it was 7-on-7, the kid was just such a tremendous playmaker, and what an incredible kid. But I mean, honestly, I could go down the list. I mean, you got Kari Adams, who just blows everybody away every time you see him. Long athletic corner. It would have been really fun to see him coached by Mike Mickens, but obviously it's not going to work out. But the guy that really, for me, in talking to the coaches at Notre Dame, the guy they're extremely fired up about, and again, not that they're not fired up about the other guys I mentioned, but a guy that they felt like a lot of the recruiting services were missing on was Aiden Pouncey, the 6'3", 6'2", 165-pound corner. He could play safety, corner, anywhere in the defensive backfield. Like, that's just the kid that, like, let him cook, as the kids say. I mean, just get him on the field, let him do his thing, and he's going to make plays. He is a guy that they believe could eventually be a first-round pick. In talking to some people, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. Some think Joey O'Brien's the guy. Some think Aiden Pouncey's the guy. But either way, it's an embarrassment of riches back there. But, I mean, again, could go on and on. But that group right there at the top, that four all on the defensive side of the ball, it's a special group headed to South Bend, man. I think everybody needs to be really, really fired up about that group.
Absolutely, man. And obviously, kind of sticking with that theme of these top defensive backs, like, we have a number of guys who are right on that, you know, top 100 range, and they're all really exciting. And I think Pouncey's one of those guys who, you know, he played about as well as anyone in the country his senior year. So for the Notre Dame coaches to feel that that's going to continue, that momentum is going to carry over into the early part of his career is something that's really exciting. But one of the guys who maybe isn't as heralded in that defensive backs room is Nick Reddish. He's someone that fascinates me. Obviously listed as a safety, he's a three-star, but Notre Dame has loved him as a four-star prospect for a long time. They've been looking at him as a blue chipper. They see some versatility where he could even potentially line up at nickel. He has some experience even playing linebacker and kind of getting up in the box. When you look at Nick Reddish's game, like, what do you see coming to the Notre Dame football program in the back end? Where do you see him lining up best?
Yeah, so he really broke out as a sophomore, and there's so much to like about his overall game. Obviously, we know he dealt with some injuries over his, you know, during his high school career, but and he is on the smaller side, but I love that he just packs a punch when he hits. I mean, he is such a heady, smart football player. He's instinctive. I think he's got enough speed. He's a true athlete. But what I just like most about him is that just like the mental side of playing the position and likely the safety position, but I think he could absolutely cover if you lined up at corner or nickel. But his ability to read a play out, react, show his instincts, and then come up and lay the wood again for a smaller statured kid, like, that fires me up, because this kid just loves playing football. He's got a nasty streak about him. And that you see that a lot. Like, I think back to guys that are, you know, before your time or before a lot of people, like a Greg Reed that played for Florida State way back in the day, like, smaller kid, played, you know, was a punt returner, kick returner, played corner, played safety. And he was just not a guy like a first off the bus guy, but man, he would lay the wood. I mean, he loved contact. I mean, he embraced it. He wanted to like make his presence felt. And I see a lot of that in Nick Reddish. Like, the kid just loves football, loves to hit people. And like, those are the kind of guys you want out there, because you don't want guys that are timid. You don't want the diva defensive backs that are afraid of making contact with guys. I mean, you want guys to be physical, especially the schedule Notre Dame plays. You know, they're going to be a playoff team just about every year over the next couple of years. I mean, I don't see them missing it anytime soon. Like, they're going to be competing for national championships. So I just think you got to have glue guys like a Nick Reddish, who potentially could outperform their ranking, potentially could find himself being drafted one day. But regardless, you're going to see a kid that makes a lot of plays at the collegiate level.
Absolutely. And then kind of to close out the defensive backs group, I think Chaz Smith has been a guy who's interesting on the Notre Dame radar, right? He committed pretty early. He's played at several different schools. He's kind of been at some different spots throughout his career. And I think that in general, he's one of the guys that's harder to get info on, right? The stats are harder to come by. It's just been a little bit tougher to dig that stuff up. So from the outside perspective, maybe Chaz Smith is a little bit more of the, oh, we don't know as much about him. What did you see, especially as I know you were living down there in Tennessee at the same time as him, any chance to see and hear anything about, you know, Chaz Smith and his talents?
Yeah, so he was banged up at times too, but as he progressed throughout his process, I love this kid more and more. And he, you know, he is actually the first off the bus kind of guy. I mean, he's long, he's athletic, he's got a great frame to him, a great build. And I'm glad we ended up making him a four-star and moved him up at the rankings, because I know he felt pretty disrespected by it. But in the end, I mean, when we're going back and forth and we're looking at the top players in Tennessee, and it's easy to show love to a Jared Curtis or a Big Squish, Gabe Osenda headed to Tennessee, and all these other guys. I mean, I think there was one of the more unheralded guys was Chaz Smith. And I felt like he was a guy that we may have been missing on for a little bit because of, but there wasn't a lot of data out there. There wasn't a lot of, you know, he missed some time as a junior and missed, I think it was junior year. And so like, there wasn't a ton out there, played some 7-on-7, did some other, like, there just wasn't a lot of data points out there to really dive into Chaz Smith as a player. But as he progressed and as time went on, we just, you know, fell in love with kid more and more. And as you talk to people at Notre Dame and you talk to others, you know, sources at other schools, they all raved about Chaz Smith. And he was a guy that like they were fired up for Notre Dame to land. And because he's that kind of kid and he's a great kid, and he's a great, you know, they were speaking about him a lot of the same ways that Leonard Moore was discussed before he got to Notre Dame. Just a high level athlete, a kid that has the day one frame and size and length and the mental makeup to go at Notre Dame, go to Notre Dame and make a lot of plays. So he's a guy that I think Notre Dame fans should be pretty excited about for his future.
Absolutely. I know he's one that when we watched his tape early on, it was like, my God, can this guy just stick guys? Like, he can hit, he can really just deliver the boom, but that was kind of all we had in the early part. And then you saw more and more, and especially this last year, it felt like he really blossomed in coverage and was able to show a lot more of that. Just really impressed, especially that week one game. I think he had 2-3 interceptions, like just a really impressive senior campaign. And then just kind of diving into the defensive line. Like, I know obviously you've already had a chance to speak about Rodney Dunham, the 5-star at the top, but there's 3 other defensive linemen in this class, really talented bunch. Obviously another edge rusher, Ebenezer Iwatade, kind of a younger player still rounding into that form. And then you have 2, you know, long time real bruisers who are going to be more in the middle, and Elijah Golden and Tiki Hola. What were some of your impressions of that defensive line group? And really, I guess the heart of the question is, do you think this is a group that's going to move the needle for the Notre Dame defensive line room in a way that maybe recruitniks have been asking for in recent classes?
I remember the first time I talked to somebody at Notre Dame about Iwatade, and they called him, they said he would be shocked if he wasn't eventually a first round pick. They love the upside and potential of this kid. Now, I'm not saying that he hit necessarily what everybody thought as a senior before getting to Notre Dame, but man, the upside is through the roof with this kid. I mean, you're talking 6'3", 6'4", 230, a guy that's going to have that ability to step on the campus right away and make an impact if called upon. But if not, a year from now, after being there for in the weight room and kind of just learning the ropes, I mean, look out. I mean, this kid, he just oozes potential and upside. I mean, we ended up putting him inside the top 150, which fired me up. But I mean, personally, I would have loved him a little bit higher. But this kid, he's got the speed, he's got the quickness, he's got the length. I mean, he can kind of play all over the, you know, across the defensive line. But there's just something about this kid, man. He just gets to the quarterback. He sacks the quarterback. He knows how to properly tackle. He's kind of reckless. And I mean it in like a complimentary way. I'm not saying like he's just not going all over the place. Like, he knows how to play the position, and that excites me. Elijah Golden, another guy we did his commitment on CBS Sports and 24/7 Sports, a guy that I got to know extremely well throughout the process. I mean, I remember seeing him a year or so prior at the National Combine in San Antonio. And he told me then, 2 dream offers. It was one as Notre Dame, and Michigan was the other one. And, you know, you don't always see that where guys that, you know, he's from Virginia, was from Florida, kind of back and forth. But you don't always see like Notre Dame as the true dream offer where they actually end up at Notre Dame. A lot of guys say it's Notre Dame. Oh, I love Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish. But like, this kid actually meant that the entire time. So it was cool to see him actually follow through and be recruited like a top target for Al Washington for such a long time. Marcus Freeman got extremely involved. I mean, I know this got a little dicey with Oklahoma at one point, but again, the kid wanted to be at Notre Dame, and good for him. And I remember seeing him at the Navy All-American Bowl, and he was terrific. And just a guy that as you kind of get to know him, you love the kid and you want the best for him. And he's just like the kid that always has a smile on his face. He's a locker room guy, gets everybody uplifted. And then the lights come on and he straps in, and he's just got this nastiness about him. So fired up about Elijah Golden. And then Tiki Hola was an interesting case because he was ranked really high early on and he had a bunch of offers. And then a lot of schools cooled on him and didn't really see the upside anymore. Didn't they see the potential? They saw him as kind of a role player. But for Notre Dame, they never treated him like a role player. They wanted him bad. And they kind of scoffed at the 3-star ranking. We ended up slapping on him toward the end. We thought he was a top 100 player and an always loaded Lone Star State there in Texas. But Tiki Hola is just a guy that I'm not going to bet against. I think he's, especially with Partridge there and kind of coaching him up, I think that I know Notre Dame is fired up about this kid. They're really, really excited. They wanted to get that one done, and it got a little interesting. You had the Texas schools involved and a few others, and there were a lot of people pushing to get this kid. USC, despite what anybody else wants to say, they wanted Tiki Hola. They were all over him, and it was a big win for Notre Dame. So another, at minimum, depth piece right away, but a guy that if he ends up being a starter at Notre Dame, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, like I said, they speak really, really high of him in South Bend.
Absolutely. And on Elijah Golden, I know there's been, you know, some question, you know, is he going to be an interior player? Is he going to line up on the edge? It sounds like the interior is where Notre Dame wants to start him. Maybe a similar transition comparing to like Chris Burgess. But One thing that really stands out to me about Golden's makeup, because a lot of times when guys have that designation, they can be called tweeters, and that's not a good comment, right? It's, oh, we're not sure where they have a home. I think Golden is going to grow in to have a home on that interior. He can still do some of that outside, you know, from the edge pass rush, especially in three-man front sets. But my goodness, man, he's so physical. And if he can just get his pad level consistent, he's going to dominate at the next level. We saw it in high school. I mean, when they put everything together, he looked unstoppable. So I'm really, really curious to see what that looks like, especially under the tutelage of a guy like Charlie Partridge, man. I mean, that's such a boon for Notre Dame. But just kind of wrapping up the defense here with the linebackers, obviously the smallest group here, if you will, a two-man class, Thomas Davis Jr. and Jacoby Clapper. Both of those guys, you know, are kind of right on that four-star limit. Thomas Davis ended up a four-star, but was outside the top 247. Clapper's, you know, at the high end of the three-star range. What do you see in the future of the Notre Dame linebacker from these guys? Two very different players, which is interesting.
Thomas Davis Jr. is an interesting case because I remember seeing him a year or so ago at Battle Miami, really around this time. Mm-hmm. And I liked what I saw. He moved better than I expected. I kind of looked at him as a guy that was going to eventually just kind of grow into an edge, wasn't athletic enough to play linebacker. But I don't see that. I think he's a guy that, yeah, could he pack on the pounds and look like the monster that his dad was, and what maybe Junior grows into an edge. But I think he's, you know, I like our director of scouting, Andrew Ivins, will projection for him at the next level. And he nailed it. High IQ. And that's exactly what Thomas Davis Jr. is. And he is going to be one of the smartest players on your defense, which is what you want. He's got that captain mentality. He really reminds me a lot of Drake Bowen coming out of high school, just a thumper, an athlete, a leader. He's got all the intangibles, a lot of the things that you want to see, whether it's a middle linebacker, outside linebacker, whatever, you know. That's why those guys make a lot more money to coach that at the highest level. And I know, you know, one thing that sticks out to me is Marcus Freeman is really excited about this kid and loves him. And we love the makeup. We love the physical makeup, the mental makeup of this guy. And I think he's just, again, I said it earlier, but Thomas Davis Jr. is not a guy you want to bet against because of the bloodlines, because of the work ethic and the nastiness about him. So excited about him. And Jacoby Clapper is a guy that, you know, I've been excited about him for a long time. I would have loved to get that four star on him at the end, but you know, me being in Nashville at the moment, it's tougher to me to get out to the Midwest and go to Cincinnati to see one of his games or get eyes on him. And he didn't do a lot of camps. He didn't kept his recruitment very quiet, as you know, mm-hmm. for a long time. So he's just, what I like about it though, on the flip side, is all about his business. He just kind of gets after it and he named his top two, Notre Dame and Oregon, and was considering those two schools, and then was like, all right, I'm over this process. I want to be done with it. And sometimes, more often than not, those guys that are all about their business, they pan out on the football field because they're about school, football, working out, not really about anything else, and they just want to be great. So I love the stat line. I love the effort. I love the motor. Clapper's a dog, man. There's a lot to like about this kid. And, you know, he was coveted. He may not have announced all of his offers, but down the stretch, he was being pushed for by just about every major program in the country. There's a lot of schools that like him. Most notably, I thought the big three in the Midwest with Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, all pushing for him. They got really good linebacker coaches, great staffs, great defensive staffs, and guys that they, you know, they get the most out of their guys, especially the linebacker position. So if I'm a Notre Dame fan, I'm excited about Thomas Davis Jr. and really excited about Jacoby Clapper as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because they're so different. Like Clapper's, you know, sideline to sideline, able to play the run, kind of downhill player. And then Davis is a former safety. He has that take a step back and understand the space around him, ability and coverage. It's really fascinating to watch him in coverage because he looks like a defensive back with his comfortability, and his ability to just play in space. It's really pretty exciting to watch. And kind of kicking it over to the offense, I know that there's a lot of places you can start the conversation about this offensive class, whether that's, you know, the offensive line, big group, great feedback early on, or the wide receivers, five receivers added just in this freshman class. But I think by default, Tom, we kind of have to start with the quarterback, seeing as two of them are competing to be the backup this spring, or this summer with Gerard. So with those two, I know they're, once again, really different kind of prospects. They have wildly different games from one another and even from CJ Carr. What do you like about the two quarterbacks Notre Dame added in this 26 class?
I mean, we'll start with Noah Grubbs, a guy that I've gotten to know extremely well throughout the process. Been around him, been around everybody around him, from agents to quarterback coaches and all of the above. And Noah Grubbs is, you know, phenomenal kid. And I was excited to have him in the Navy All-American Bowl a year or so ago and as a junior, and just a lot to like about him. The moment was never too big. The kid is a winner at the high school level. He gets the most out of not only himself, but also his teammates around him. He's a leader. And then talent-wise, I mean, he throws a good football. He's a little – got to clean up the mechanics just a touch. But as a whole, I really like Noah Grubbs in the sense of I think he could come to Notre Dame. He could absolutely compete for the job. If he ended up winning it, I wouldn't be shocked because, again, he's got the size – he's got the arm talent. He's a winner. He's got that moxie to him. You know, we ended up naming him a 3-star prospect, and I kind of agree with that. I was right in that 88, 89 range. Didn't hate it. And just big picture, though, I just think that Grubbs isn't Teddy Girard, like as we kind of transition to him. I like Teddy a little bit more. But Grubbs, man, he's just – it's tough because I don't see it right this second as a guy that's going to – go in Notre Dame and be the guy after CJ Carr. But I think he's a slower burn, takes the time, continues to fill out. Cause I mean, he might be listed. I don't know what he's listed at Notre Dame, but over 200 pounds. I think we had him at 205 at the All-American Bowl a year ago. But I mean, he's the guy that I think will just kind of continue to physically mature, fill out, get stronger. And I know he's done a great job of like cleaning up his body, had some baby fat, and just really got right for his senior season, and he leaves as a state champion. And it fires me up, man, because he's the kind of kid you go to bat for and you want to support. He is a Notre Dame kid, as we all kind of call him. He is a great ambassador for the program. And I think he's a guy that whether he wins the job or not, he's going to make that room better. With Teddy Girard, I mean, I saw him again recently at a couple events, and I saw him most notably just this past weekend at the Sevens in Atlanta. And just the more I see of Teddy Girard, the more I fall in love with the kid, man. He is really, really talented. Now, I'm not going to jump on the table and say he's a 5-star. I'm not going to jump out and say he's the best quarterback in America, but there is a lot to like about this kid. And as we continue to progress, like, yes, there, you needed to see growth. You need to see time. You want to see the stat line improve. You want to see just the fact that he's going to have more games under his belt. Like, is he ready for the move from the 27 to the 26 class? Was he? Absolutely. Especially on the mental side. The kid is like wired the right way. You kind of get around him. I'm literally standing next to him at these 7-on-7 events. And he's got this command of the team. And he's super poised and he's calm and he's confident in his abilities. I'm telling you, like, Teddy Girard is going to be the starter after CJ Carr. Like, I fully believe that. Once CJ's done this year or next, Teddy Girard's going to be the guy. I'm not even sure they're going to go to the portal. They might go to the portal for some competition. And who knows? You never, you know, I could eat my words and some elite dude comes into the portal and just enters and wants to be at Notre Dame. But I feel like Teddy's going to be the guy after CJ Carr, and I feel great about it. I think the more I see him, the more I get around him, I'm just really impressed. I mean, I would have loved to see that 4-star next to his name when push came to shove, but in the end, he's the top 25 quarterback nationally, which is a very good ranking for a guy that reclassed from 27 to 26. Especially, and not a guy with a huge body of work behind him. He's a guy that's going to need as many reps as possible. It's a bummer he's got to wait till June to get there, but it's been great to see him on the 7-on-7 circuit because all of these reps, playing with high-level prospects, seeing the speed of the game, he's getting more comfortable as I see him. I'm telling you, man, like, I'm way, way more excited about Teddy Girard than I was just a few months ago. I believe he is the future of Notre Dame football, the quarterback position.
Absolutely. And just a couple notes on Girard. I know from when we were at the Battle 7-on-7 Miami together, talking to his 7-on-7 coaches, they passed on some feedback to me that the Notre Dame coaches had put Girard through a whiteboard exercise, basically, you know, having to map out plays or defensive structures on the whiteboard and kind of go through memory recall, go through different drills and have to call back all the usual stuff. You see it a lot in the draft. And the Notre Dame coaches said that Teddy Girard was about the most impressive quarterback they've put through those exercises, regardless of class. So he definitely impressed them with just sort of the mental makeup. And as for his readiness to make that jump to the 26 class, I have several sources now who have told me that not only did Notre Dame approach Teddy about making that jump, but Indiana had come to him and talked to him about potentially being a 26 quarterback, and so had Georgia. So clearly it's not just the folks in South Bend who think that he's ready to make that leap and join a college football program right away. That's a national interest. And then kind of looking at it here, I think the best place for us to take it here is the future pass catchers, the guys who are going to be catching passes from these quarterbacks down the line. Five freshman wide receivers. You have a really pretty dramatic array of talents. Like obviously you have your bigger bodied talents like Caden Finley and Devin Fitzgerald, who can more project to the boundary, maybe even like a bigger slot. You have your more traditional slot receivers and guys like Bubba Frazier and Braden Robinson. And then you have Dylan Faison, who looks more like a true field. But once again, the talent lends itself well to actually kind of moving around a bit. What do you like about this five-man class, Tom? And from where I'm sitting, there's a lot to like.
It's a great class, man. Shout out Mike Brown. Did a great job. Mike Denbrock as well. They nailed it when it came to this group. But it's funny, I know I wrote this at Irish Illustrated, but the opinions of who's the best and who's the worst of this five, they vary across the board. As you can, you talk to these sources inside the Goog. Some think Devin Fitzgerald is the best one. Some think it's Kadon Finley. Some think it the sneaky guy like a Dylan Faison be like, oh, he's just going to be as good or better than his brother. Me, I'm a little all over the board. It's hard for me to go against Devin Fitzgerald. I've seen him multiple times. I've watched him dominate at the high school level. I've watched him carry his professional vibe about his business. He is completely buttoned up, and watching him just dominate on the 7-on-7 circuit. Really, really happy we put him in the top 247 because Devin Fitzgerald is just a guy. Again, I'm not going to bet against him. Obviously, the bloodlines are there, but this kid's big. He's strong. He's physical. He's smooth as his route running. He makes all of these incredible catches. Makes him look super easy. So Devin Fitzgerald is a tremendous talent, super skill. He's versatile. He can do a lot of things at a very high level. So really excited about him. Caden Finley is a guy that, he gets talked about a lot like Jaden Greathouse, super heralded coming out of high school. Again, great bloodlines, NFL bloodlines. He's a do-it-all kind of kid. He's big, he's strong, he's physical, a lot like Devin Fitzgerald. So again, a lot to like there. Just missed being in the top 247, but no slight there because we think he's one of the more talented and polished receivers in 2026. And then Bubba Frazier is one of my favorite receivers in this entire class. I mean, he is a jitterbug, man. He is a nightmare for defensive backs. And he dominates in high school, dominates on the 7-on-7 circuit. And I wish we could have had more exposure to him at different points because he's just this playmaker that I don't know. I mean, Notre Dame's had on occasion, but not to this extent. Like, I think yeah. Bubba Frazier is going to be have those freak show type of moments early. He's super exciting. He is electric with the ball in his hands. He will take the top off the defense. I mean, he is rocked up. He doesn't look the part. He's not like that guy that oh man, I'm afraid of that dude.
Yeah.
But as soon as he gets on the field, you are terrified when he gets the ball in his hands. Braden Robinson, interesting. Like I was doing JV and Osborne's live commitment in Texas and I met Braden Robinson. And it's funny, maybe that was the second time I met him after Battle Miami a year ago, but he's close to my height. We're almost eye level. We're right there, which is never a great sign because I'm not the tallest guy and you're right there with me, but Braden Robinson is just, again, electric, explosive with the ball in his hands, great top end speed. I mean, he will blow you away with the speed. No question about it. So I think that the right offensive coordinator looking at Mike Denbrock, get him the ball in space. He's super speedy. He makes those chunk plays. I know how they love to get creative with guys and weapons. So I know they're going to do a great job with him. So I'm excited about Braden. I really like that duo with him and Bubba Frazier. And then Dylan Faison, again, love Jordan coming out of high school. We were higher on me and Andrew Evans were super high on him coming out of high school. And my thing for Dylan is I got to know him really well. He played for SFE, South Florida Express, on the 7-on-7 circuit. And I got to know him really well. I would be right there with him, kind of chopping it up, watching the game. He is so smart. Like that kid, when it comes to X's and O's, when it comes to playing the position, he is extremely dialed in, man. That guy, and I think that's what makes me so excited about him, because he's a lacrosse guy, he's a football guy. There's not a ton of body of work out there in terms of like that national exposure. But the more you get around him, again, another guy I don't really want to bet against, because I'm just, I've seen him up close. I've watched him watch plays, and he's just like, this guy's going to be open, and this guy's doing this, and I'm watching the safety here. And you're kind of just picking his brain. And it's like, I feel like I'm talking to like a high level receivers coach here. And then you're talking about a guy who's 6 foot on the nose, 175 pounds, but he's long. Like he's got this weird frame where he looks like he's 6'2". Like if he really only checked in at like 6 feet tall on the nose, whatever the case may be, like it's super surprising to me, because he's just got this wiry, long, athletic. He's a playmaker. He can beat you downfield. He can beat you underneath. A lot to like about Faison. And again, I just the athleticism. He's been very productive at the high school level, but it's the mental makeup for that kid that really, really fires me up at the next level.
Absolutely. And kind of taking it to the tight end group here. Look, sometimes you get the traditional inline blockers, the big burly dudes who are going to accentuate the run game. And sometimes you get dynamic receiving weapons in the tight end class. And Notre Dame got two of the latter, with obviously Preston Frizell and the big name ticket, Ian Premer. I want to start with obviously Ian, and he's the five-star talent. He's the kid from Kansas who was expected to pick Kansas State and then flipped to Notre Dame, or flipped, but you know what I mean? Flipped the interest to Notre Dame at the last second. There's a lot of drama in this recruitment, and it's sort of fitting for a five-star talent who maybe thought he was going to be a smaller market kid, right, at one point in his recruitment. What do you see coming to the Notre Dame tight end room with Ian Premer? And I guess more specifically, given the talent and the upside in that room already, is he a guy who can come in and play right away?
Absolutely. No question about it. Would have loved to see him at the Navy All-American Bowl, but he had some other priorities. But man, this dude, to hear Notre Dame talk about this guy, you thought you got like the next great tight end. They are so excited about this guy. And for great reason. I mean, high level athlete, elite football player, super athletic, versatile, nasty basketball player, you know, finishes above the rim, just a lot to like about him. And then he's just got this nastiness about him, a great demeanor where he doesn't just love blocking, like he loves putting you into the turf. He loves finishing blocks. So again, he does everything that you want as a Notre Dame tight end. So you see why Marcus Freeman, Mike Denbrock, and all those guys are really excited about him, and why we're so excited about him at 24/7 Sports, naming him the number one tight end in the entire country. So shout out to Andrew Ivins for that one. And really Gabe Brooks and the rest of our guys, Hudson Standish, the opinions did not vary when it came to Ian Premer. And shout out Kansas becoming like tight end ST. Like the state of tight ends, you had Lincoln Cure. I mean, there's a lot of good tight ends in 27 and in 28. So it's becoming a hotbed for tight ends. So shout out to the state of Kansas right there. But Preston Frizell, a guy that Notre Dame was really excited about, a kid out of Ohio, Midwest guy. Again, they're not singing his praises like they are about Ian Premer, but they're not knocking him like he's some slouch either. So they're excited about him, and he had a nice offer list as well. So he had a lot of schools coming after him. So again, a versatile kid, an inline guy, he can block. He's a willing blocker. Again, more of that nasty streak you're looking for, but can beat you in the passing game as well. So really nice duo. Again, I there's a reason I like saying their praises for this 2026 recruiting class. It was truly one of the best in the entire country, and this duo really helped that.
All right, Tom. So I think the next part of the conversation that I want to jump into is the offensive linemen. Now, obviously, it's another big group headed to South Bend, the second straight class that they've brought in a hefty load of talent to come in and support that unit. Most of those guys are on campus enrolled now. Obviously, Ben Nichols and Gregory Patrick will be joining their cohorts in the summer. But I want to get your thoughts on that group. I know the early feedback, as was discussed on the Irish Illustrated Insider podcast last week, they said that there was great feedback for those offensive linemen early, but I want to hear what you've been hearing so far.
A lot of positive reviews, that's for sure. And it kind of ties into what we saw in 25 and before. I mean, this is a really good group. And I think there were a lot of like snickering and question marks as the guys were initially evaluated, initially pursued. And then as time went on, you're kind of like, I kind of get it. Like, it makes sense. Maybe trust Joe Rudolph to do a pretty good job. So really nice group. And again, I mean, I don't even know where to start. I guess we could start with like Ben Nichols, this big mauler of an offensive lineman who had every offer in the country, a guy that we see as a guard at 24/7 Sports, a guy projecting, but an athlete. Like, this is not like some big bodied kid that can't move. I mean, he's a multi-sport athlete, a guy who does a lot of good things on the football field. And, you know, like Gabe Brooks called him a jumbo athlete, like a guy who's, like I said, this big bodied athletic kid that will be tough to keep off the field. I mean, he's like got that hard nose, blue collar, just that nasty streak you want in your lineman. So really excited about Ben Nichols. Grayson McHugh, like, again, would have loved to see him at the Navy All-American Bowl competing against some of the best defensive linemen in the country. It didn't work out. So, you know, it is what it is. It would have just been really, really nice to see him. And it could have impacted that ranking one way or the other. Just kind of, we put him inside the top 150 for good reason. He's definitely a stock up guy. I think other sites had him a little higher and great. We just didn't get to the point where we saw enough data to move him that high. So it is what it is. We're not going to follow somebody else's lead, and we're just going to kind of go by. Our scouting team does a phenomenal job of diving into the details and intricacies of the position and looking at NFL comps and things like that. So again, just for the casual fan, like, we're projecting to the NFL draft. So if you see Grayson, he's around 147, like, we see a draft pick, just not a first or second rounder. So, but again, really athletic. I mean, he's a big bodied kid, and that's just the upside of potential is through the roof. So really excited about him. Again, multi-sport background, a lot of the traits you want to see as to why he's that high ceiling, high floor kind of kid. So really excited about him. And Notre Dame is just, they gush about him all the time. So they're clearly fired up about him. But a guy that we're really fired up about at 24/7 Sports is Charlie Tom out of Connecticut. You know, that's, you get a little hit or miss up in that region at times for some guys. So it'll be interesting, but this is a guy that I think his best football's ahead of him, but we like the upside. We like the ceiling there. Kind of a fluid athlete that really, in my opinion, kind of still learning the position and kind of still growing into the position. So expecting him to be a tackle at the next level, long, athletic, still filling out, but he'll be 300 pounds in no time. But a guy who's going to carry his weight well. Really like the two early pickups, Tyler Merrill and Gregory Patrick. Two more four-star prospects, one in the top 247 that just, again, more potential. Guys with high ceilings, high floors. I don't expect them to miss on all these guys. I expect it. This is a really good offensive line class. Like, you could make an argument that it's the best in the country when you look at top to bottom and the guys that are going to hit. So, shout out Joe Rudolph, man. I mean, they were looking for guys that were they had the nasty streak, the maulers, the upside, the potential, the guys that didn't really have a high bust factor, a high bust potential. And I think they nailed it with all five guys. So really good group. The matchups with the guys that they landed along the defensive line and offensive line, man, they are going to be fun to watch for years to come. But really impressive group. If I were to guess as to the guy that I think ends up being the best of the bunch, the highest draft pick, kind of leaning towards Charlie Tom, but we'll see. A lot to like from this group of five.
Absolutely. It's a really mobile group. A lot of great athletes, like you mentioned, multi-sport guys who can really, especially at the tackle side, they can really get wide. They look totally natural going up against speed, kind of pressing them to move. And it's just really a top down, like a deep group of guys that can add at every position, right? Like, you have a center in Sullivan Garvin, you have interior guys, you have tackles. Like, they really filled out the offensive line group with this class. And it gives you some versatility when you pair that with the 2025 group and just how loaded that was with guys like Will Black and Owen Strabig, Matty Augustine. Like, there's a lot to work with within these two groups together as Notre Dame kind of processes through this current generation of offensive linemen. But we'll wrap
like,
up.
I don't think there's a Will Black. Like, I don't think there's a Will Black in this class. Like,
no.
I still think Will is probably the guy when you're kind of comparing both classes. Like, I don't know if you agree with that or not, but I think Will Black is kind of the best of the bunch when you're comparing the both classes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, he's he's a little bit different. I remember the head coach for Brunswick Schools team, Mr. McGillicuddy, Coach McGillicuddy, he told us about, you know, some of the offensive linemen he's worked with in the past. And he referenced Jake Long was kind of the big one. And he compared Matty Augustine to Jake Long and said, you know, there's a lot of similarities there. And then Bill and the way he moves. And then we asked him about Will Black and he went, that cat's just different. He's just different altogether. And it made me laugh because it's like, you're talking about what, number one overall pick? Like, that's pretty impressive if he's different than that guy.
Yeah. But, yeah.
And then just kind of with the running backs, I know obviously there's been a lot of intrigue with these two, not only two blue chip prospects from, you know, Georgia and Texas, two of the most loaded states in the union with talent, but you have a unique opportunity at running back in that there's presumably Aeneas Williams at the top as RB1 and a lot of question marks for who's going to take that second step. So with these two backs, obviously, again, you got kind of your pure runner in Javion Osborne, that classic throwback between the tackles, bell cow. And then you got with Jonas Walton, Mr. Utility. He can do just about anything you need a running back to do. How do you like these two backs coming to South Bend? And for, you know, one or the other, do you see a particular opportunity to maybe get in the field early and establish that trust?
Look, don't be writing off my guy, Nolan James, then, all right? He's
yes, sir.
He might
no,
be
sir.
The guy next year, all right? So don't be not writing him off. But this class, this duo, Jonas Walton and Javion Osborne, what a job by the entire staff to get this one done. I mean, Juwan Sider goes out and wants to recruit the best of the best. And, you know, it's when you always have a loaded running backs room, it's tough. Like you're kind of, you got to find the right guys that want to compete because there's always that next man up mentality, exactly. Especially after Jadarian Price, Jeremiah Love off to the NFL. But I really, really like Walton, and this is a guy that I was fired up to see him kind of vault up the running backs ranking, almost finding himself in the top 10 nationally at the running back position. I know Hudson Standish, our national scouting analyst at 24/7 Sports, really excited about this kid. But again, I mean, super productive, talented prospect. Walton is a dynamic guy, had over 80 touchdowns during his high school career, has the track background. So again, it's kind of like we're, you know, a lot of similar things we're talking about with Jadarian Price, just the versatility, the strength, the freak build. So there's a lot to like about Walton. I'm really excited about his potential there. And then Javion Osborne obviously was in the Lone Star State for his life commitment, got around him, got around his family. What an incredible group, man. Really, really enjoyed getting to know Javion and his family while I was there for 24 hours. So a lot to like there. Again, another productive back, a lot to like. He kind of ends up being ranked in that top 247, another 4-7 round grade. So again, we see two draft picks at the running back position, which again, it's what you want to see when you're looking at the classes from top to bottom. There's a lot of top 247 guys, a lot of four-star prospects, a lot of draft picks from this group. But I think he's a guy that, you know, talking to college coaches that I respect, guys that know the position better than I do, would forget more about the position than I know. They really like Javion Osborne. They really like Jonas Walton. Osborne checks a lot of boxes, low center of gravity. Again, not a big guy in terms of height. Again, not too far from me height-wise. We're not eye level, but we're close. Same thing I was saying about Braden Robinson. But low man wins in football. Love the low center of gravity. The kid's got burst. Kid's got toughness. He's a power runner. Got great vision, instincts. He will make you miss. Got enough speed to take it wide, take the top off. Like, just a lot to like about these. These are two very, very complete backs, productive backs. So really good job by Juwan Sider to land two of his top targets in 26.
Absolutely. And obviously, just kind of looking at this class, I mean, when you have a class with this much talent and this much blue chip talent specifically, there's always going to be some level of expectation of, okay, who's going to hit the field early? Who's going to come out and show themselves to be that kind of, you know, bona fide star right away? When you're looking at this list top to bottom, not only just the talents themselves, but someone like yourself, you follow Notre Dame, you obviously have a good eye on the roster. Do you see an opportunity for any of these players to really cement their status in the 2D as freshmen?
I mean, I can only go by what they say about these guys behind closed doors and the guys they continue to gush about. We kind of mentioned early Rodney Dunham, Joey O'Brien, Kari Adams, Aiden Pouncey. I mean, they rave about these guys. And again, the list really does go on and on about guys that they believe will make an impact. Devin Fitzgerald, Caden Finley. There's guys that will make an impact for this Notre Dame football team right away. It's especially when you have the 4-game window where they can play and not have to, where they can still redshirt but get some opportunities. But these are guys, what I like most about this class is that they are guys that physically are ready to play, mentally are ready to play. And that's not always the case when you get Notre Dame signees. You get the guys that are ready to play from a physical standpoint at times, but you don't necessarily have the guys that are that understand like what it takes athletically and academically to survive and really thrive at Notre Dame. And you get the guys that are the really good football players, and you also get the guys that are the really good students. But like getting tremendous student athletes is really what made up this 2026 recruiting class. And it's why I'm so excited about it. I mean, I think it was it was clearly a surefire top five recruiting class, but like there was a reason we were talking about them being around the number one spot when all was said and done, because it's a tremendous group. It is loaded from top to bottom. And I think when you even including some of the special teams guys, like talking to some people at Notre Dame about, you know, punters and kickers and the guys that landed in Scafey, and then Flip and Drescher, who initially signed with Michigan, like they're really excited about these guys. And they felt like they landed guys that are going to come in and make an impact right away. Like if Scafey's not one of your start, he's not a starter as your punter, I'm going to be shocked, because they were just raving about him, and he's next man up, and he's an adult, man. He's in his 20s and he's ready to go. So just a lot to like about this class as a whole. And I think that when you look at this class and you look at some of the past classes, like we are no longer in a time where we're talking about just making the playoffs. Like it is Notre Dame's time, and they are going to be pushing and competing for national championships. Like the future is really, really bright. Fighting Irish fans should be fired up about what's to come.
Absolutely. And just to kind of put a bow on some of those early impact guys, I think there's, starting with one of the guys you mentioned earlier, Aiden Pouncey, and even kind of working down the list with that angle of special teams, there's several guys who could, whether it's in the return game, whether it's on coverage duties, that could make an impact on that side of things right away. We saw Aiden Pouncey was really wildly productive as a returner. I know, you know, Braden Robinson's done the same, Bubba Frazier's done the same, so there's options there. But one that I kind of have an eye out on, and this is just a forecasting, I think your guy Jacoby Clapper might earn a role on special teams. That guy has the mentality, he has the downhill physicality, and he has the side-to-side sideline ability to be able to, hey, if I need to be disciplined in a lane on the outside, I can make adjustments on the fly and still make a physical play in space. That's a guy I could see carving out a role earlier than some people think, just on like kickoff and punt coverage duties, just because the wiring is so right for it.
No argument there. Clapper is a dude, and I love that. That's a great call, because he is going to take people's heads off on special teams. And that's a great call if you're looking at an early impact guy, a guy that will be on special teams day one. Yeah, that's a great call. It makes me think like who else is going to be in that boat. Chaz Smith is probably another one that just has the size, the speed, the physical makeup to make an impact. Thomas Davis Jr. as well. So a lot to like. I got one for you. Let me throw out a little random question at you. I was just kind of looking at the list, talked about a bunch of guys, and I'm kind of thinking like, who did the best job from a recruiting standpoint from the assistant coaches? Like, and if you were giving an award, just kind of looked at the list, like if you were giving an award for best job of an assistant coach this cycle, who would you give that to?
I mean, look, with the rankings the way they are at the top, it's really hard not to look at our guy, Mike Mickens, obviously no longer in the building, but I'm going to go a different route here. I'm really impressed with what Mike Brown did. Much maligned at the beginning of his Notre Dame tenure, people obviously were a little bit lower on his recruiting side, especially with the Derek Meadows saga being what it was. But I think you and I were both pretty steadfast over the last year. Like, give the guy a class. Like, let him really settle in. Let him get not someone else's 2.0 board and go from the start and build something. And the result of that is a 5-man class loaded with talent. You have speed that Notre Dame hasn't really seen at the position. You got blue chip intangibles from, you know, NFL legacies in that group. You got guys who can cover all 3 major receiver positions. Like, I'm just blown away by how well that class came together. And especially when you look at it from like, where did the class look like it was trending maybe this time last year to where it actually ended up? Quite a pretty dramatic overturn. We were talking about losing guys like Connor Salomon and Naeem Burrows, and we were kind of worried about that. Now you look at it, it's like, oh, we don't have to worry about that. They got 5 great dudes. So I think I got to give the nod to Mike Brown. I'm really impressed with the class he put together, and not only the class itself, but the way he went about doing that, given the hole he was kind of put in to start his tenure.
No argument, man. I couldn't agree more. I think Mike Mickens is the easy call because of the background and the guys and the high profile additions. But I think the award goes to Mike Brown. I couldn't agree more. And you get to know Mike Brown, and I'm telling you, like, to the fans, like, this is the guy you want running your wide receiver room. And there were a lot of question marks, and they were like, oh, Marcus Freeman hired his boy, hired his buddy. And we hired his boy too, and Mike Mickens, and it worked out pretty well. Let Mike Brown cook. This guy, all he wants to do is coach football at a high level. He gets a lot out of his guys, and recruits really have come around on him and have opened up to him. And he's not going to be a rah-rah social media guy. He's not going to be pounding his chest. He's not going to be like, look at me. That's not who he is. He is a pro's pro. He develops strong relationships with all these guys. He genuinely cares about his guys, and he wants to get them right for not only to make them like great men in college and beyond, but he's setting these guys up to be pros, and he's going to make a lot of these guys that they've landed over the last couple of years, guys that he didn't even land, guys that he landed, he's going to make them pros at the next level. And I'm excited, man. If again, Notre Dame fans, like, look at Mike Brown's room, watch the growth, watch the high level of play. We're going to see that in 26 and beyond. Like, great job by Mike Brown this cycle.
Absolutely. And then I guess if we want to do honorable mentions, obviously Joe Rudolph and Coach Al Washington now with the Miami Dolphins. I think those guys have a lot to be proud of in this class here as well. So that wraps it up for segment one for us. We'll be diving into burning up the board segment two up here next after the break. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider Recruiting Edition, and we're going to jump right in with some user-submitted questions. So, Tom, this one comes to you from Irish 2025. He has a couple submissions here, so we'll kind of hit a couple of these points. Do you think we will land one of Dollar or Driver at tight end? Tom, what do you think?
I definitely feel better about Jackson Dollar. Mm-hmm. No question about it. Notre Dame's led at times, and there was a point that I had heard that he was close to committing. So We got to keep an eye on Dollar. I think the one I wouldn't feel great about is Seneca Driver. And I know there was some buzz about him with Notre Dame for a while, but between Kentucky, between Oklahoma, I think those are probably the top two schools right now when it comes to Seneca Driver. I think that he could visit Notre Dame if he really takes his time and slows his recruitment down. But, you know, Jackson Dollar is the one that's gone on the record and said, like, Notre Dame's my leader. So I think he's the one to keep an eye on. But, man, both are tremendous players, some of the top tight ends in the entire 2027 class. So I think either way, Notre Dame would be in a good spot if they could land one of them. But again, just to be clear, Jackson Dollar is the one I think is the better one.
Absolutely. And Dollar lost a couple of weeks of travel with some weather issues, and I think it was February into March. So his recruitment's kind of at a weird point where he's taken a lot of visits and there's a lot of activity. So it can seem like, okay, maybe he took a step back, but I think Notre Dame is still right there at the top. This is just sort of making up for lost time for him. Yeah. So kind of diving into the next question from Irish 2025 here. How do you think the 2027 linebacker class shakes out? And he said it seems like an important year for it, yet not a lot of buzz. And I think that last bit's kind of interesting. With all the coaching turnover and everything, it's tough to just get a sense of where this thing is headed because there's been so much turbulence.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. Obviously, they landed Amari Irvin, really nice get early. Mm-hmm. I feel like they've been connected with, you know, all the Irvins over the years. So nice win there. They're definitely in play for Caden Henderson, the top 100 linebacker out of Florida. But look, like, I've just never gotten a vibe like Notre Dame is going to get that one done. He's not a big cold weather guy. I expect him to play in a warm weather state. And, you know, Florida's in play. Like, the in-state schools are definitely in play. Texas A&M is absolutely one to watch. Mike Elko's kind of taking a personal approach there. And they're doing a really good job. So again, I think Notre Dame has a shot. We've seen some crazier things in the past with Manti Te'o and other guys that it's kind of like you didn't expect to work out and they ended up doing it. But
yeah,
I think Caden Henderson is a guy that would be a tremendous win. I just don't see it working out for Notre Dame. They just offered Joakim Nguta. I just don't see a way that Georgia is beat for a kid in state that they feel good about. It was funny. The kid told me flat out, like, Georgia was on him first. They showed him the most love. They recruited him the hardest. Kirby Smart's all over him. When he sinks his teeth into somebody that's an in-state kid, like a big-time prospect from the Peach State, they're really tough to beat. I know before Al Washington left the NFL, Josiah Poyer was a linebacker target they were really high on, and they felt like they had gained some traction with. But the pulse around him right now, Notre Dame definitely has a shot, but the pulse around him is that he's more likely to stay on the West Coast. Roman Igwebike, he's a guy that's a top 247 prospect that the Irish are absolutely in play for. he's going to visit in April. So let's keep an eye on him. But I got a guy that not a lot of people know about, and I only kind of found out about him because I was at Bishop Gorman a few weeks ago, and that's Tamatoa Naoteote. And he is the brother of one-time USC Ohio State player, Polye Naoteote, who went by EA out of Bishop Gorman. He told me flat out Notre Dame is his dream offer. The Fighting Irish staff has started to pick up the recruitment a little bit. I think he's a guy that's really going to burst onto the scene as a senior. So keep an eye on him. That could be one that Notre Dame kind of has in their back pocket and can potentially see a lot of mutual interest with the Irish and him.
Well, hey, if there's any program to pick a late riser from, Bishop Gorman's about as good as any, right? They're loaded with talent. Guys like that are going to pop up late. So, and then the last one here from Irish 2025, and I thought this was kind of a fun one to end his questions with. Give your prediction on who the 2027 quarterback commit will be. And obviously, we've kind of rounded this down. I've referenced the big three. We have Camden Lopati, Davin Davidson, and then there's obviously Champ Mons, Wonderful Mons the fourth, one of the best names in the class. You know, Tom, it's been a little bit of an odd class in general, a quarterback, from the delayed start and then kind of the Teddy Girard reclassification into this, you know, 2.0 wave. At this point, as the dust has started to settle, do you have a sense of who you think? Like, I think I know my answer, but do you have a sense of a favorite here?
Can I say nobody in terms of most likely? I it's tough, man. And look, for the casual fan, Teddy Girard had committed in the 2027 class and he reclassed to 26. So he'll be officially at Notre Dame in June. So he'll be, you know, arriving ready to roll. And just quickly, like on Teddy Girard, I like him so much more than I have even months ago. Like, I love the growth. He's killing it on the 7-on-7 circuit, getting additional reps. So really like what they landed in Teddy Girard. But Camden Lopati committed to Illinois. I mean, he's a guy that likes Notre Dame a lot. And the feeling is very mutual from the Notre Dame staff. Like, Notre Dame loves this kid. They would love nothing more than to secure his commitment and flip him from Illinois. So again, he's a very realistic possibility to end up at Notre Dame. Notre Dame is very much in the mix for Wonderful Mons, Champ Mons, whatever you want to call him, out of Florida. There's a lot of people close to him. I shouldn't say a lot. There's some people close to him that are very high in Notre Dame. There's some strong connections inside the Goog with people around Mons. So he's one to continue watching. My best guess about Davin Davidson, the top 247 quarterback, newly minted four-star, very likely to stay in state. There's a feeling that Florida and Miami are doing the best job there. Just kind of seems like he's the top guy for both schools. So it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. But best case scenario for Notre Dame right now would be Lopati. But Mons is absolutely right there. They love the mental makeup of Lopati. They like the fact that he can throw it. He's got it between the ears. Lots of, like, he's a gamer. But then with Mons, like, they love the size. Kind of talking about him the way they once talked about Deuce Knight, just in terms of the size, the ability to move a little bit. I think Lopati's the guy from that group, and I think that would be a really, really nice win for Notre Dame.
Absolutely. That's the answer I'd give too. I mean, the mutual interest on the Lopati front is definitely significant. And he told me that he was really enjoying, you know, getting to make a relationship with Coach Caduli over the last year, even before the offer came out. And that's one where I just think there's enough, where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's interest there. I guess the one caveat there is obviously there's a whole lot of Utah folks over in Michigan right now who are pretty interested in him as well. We'll have to see how that one grows. But as it stands here today, I think I like the Irish over the Wolverines if there's going to be a flip there. And then kind of jumping down to the next question here, PA Irish 5, given Coach Freeman's flirtations with the NFL last year, do you anticipate the staff having to work harder than last year to achieve somewhat comparable results? We've heard a few kids mention the uncertainty about his future, and I have to imagine it's challenging to counter that while remaining sincere about his ambitions. What do you think, Tom?
I mean, I think it's really early to be like diving into things like that, and it sounds pretty intense, but I don't anticipate the staff having to work harder. Like, they know, like, your job's on the line every day when it comes to recruiting and coaching under Marcus Freeman. So I'm not expecting anybody to have to work harder to get comparable results. In the end, Notre Dame sells itself, and you either get it or you don't. You either buy in or you don't. So I think that when it comes to Marcus Freeman's future, look, man, I think anybody that gets into this profession for – you don't necessarily want to do it like, oh, I want to just be a high school coach, or, oh, I only want to be a college coach. I think at the end, like, you all want to be coveted by the NFL. It's the highest level. Guys don't
play football when they're young to be like, man, I hope I can play high school one day. Or I hope I can play college. Like, they're all trying to make it to the NFL. And I think that's the same as the coach on the coaching front. That said, Marcus Freeman, his wife Joanna, like, everybody's very, very happy in and around Notre Dame and being around that program. I had a conversation with somebody recently that's like, if Ohio State opened up, would he rush to take that job? And at one point, sure. At this point, I don't necessarily think that's realistic. Like, I don't think he would rush to Columbus because he went to Ohio State. Like, they love being at Notre Dame, and everybody at Notre Dame wants to win. They are taking care of him. They're doing the right things. They're pushing the right buttons. They're setting him and his team up for success. He's extremely well taken care of financially. He's one of the highest paid coaches in all of college football. And he's got a pretty good thing going. And the guy loves recruiting. Like, he loves the passionate connection you can have with these college age prospects that have so much respect for you. And he goes to the NFL, like, he's not going to get that same response from guys. And he can mold these kids. He still cares about that kind of stuff. And I just think he's so well suited for the college game. And he wants to impact these guys' lives in so many ways beyond just a football field. So he's one of my favorite coaches I've ever dealt with in terms of just who he is as a person, who he is at his core. He is everything Notre Dame fans should want as their head coach. And I genuinely think he's going to be at Notre Dame for, well, as long as they'll have him.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think when I look at this, it's obviously, look, there's going to be individual cases where it's more of a concern for guys, right? Like Spell obviously addressed it directly. But the question, do they have to work harder? I think ultimately there might be some guys you have to address it with. You have to talk to them and have an open conversation with. But ultimately, when you build these relationships and when you go about the process of laying these foundational relationships to get these guys to want to, you know, be a part of your program for 3, 4, 5 years, these are conversations that you can have because there's a trust element there. So I think for the assistant coaches, it's not necessarily working harder. It's just making sure you hit the message and know who you got to address it with. That's about it.
Eric, look, in the end, you got to pay him more money. You don't have to work harder to land him. You just got to put an extra zero at the end, and that should help land these guys.
Exactly.
It's a wild, weird world we live in these days.
Makes it simple, huh? And then with the next question here, we got it from ND Reporter. Who are the top guys at edge, both in terms of most realistic and also who the staff feels best about? And I actually think there's probably some overlap in those answers.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, look, five-star edge rusher KJ Green's going to visit Notre Dame. He is a perfect fit at Notre Dame. And in a lot of years, I would say he's a guy that absolutely should and could land at Notre Dame. And it's possible. My best guess would be somewhere else right now. He's really excited about some SEC schools, notably Alabama, South Carolina, and then also Miami. Miami's doing a really good job there, though. But again, Notre Dame's got a shot. And then Zion Forstall, five-star edge rusher, is another one that's going to visit Notre Dame. He's been talking about taking a junior day visit for months. I know he initially thought it was going to be in January, but it was really in March. So he's been saying he's going to visit for junior day for a long time. So no breaking news there. Like, they're going to get him on campus, and that's the big deal. So they have an opportunity, and they would love to land him. Abraham Cisse, the top 100 edge rusher that I've been saying for a while is leaning toward Notre Dame, and that would be a big pickup. Penn State, Ohio State, many others are in play. So, but keep an eye on Notre Dame. I think they're in the driver's seat there. But you got other guys like top 100 edge rusher Makai Brown, top 100 edge rusher Aiden O'Neill. Like, there's a long list of guys that Charlie Partridge is doing a really good job with right now in his efforts, and picking right up where Al Washington left off when he transitioned to linebackers coach and then obviously off to the NFL. But I think that when you combine Partridge and Nick Sebastian, the assistant defensive line coach, those guys are going to have to turn guys away. I feel like their ability to coach at a very high level, their ability to connect with kids at a very high level, they recruit really well. And again, we kind of hinted at it jokingly, but like the money aspect, Notre Dame is completely buttoned up. So they're doing all the right things. I expect this to be a really strong defensive line class, especially at the edge spot for Notre Dame in 27.
And then the second question here from ND Reporter, is it realistic to land two of the three of Marcus Facatu, David Fuller-Runsho, and Braden Parks at defensive tackle, or even all three?
Absolutely realistic to land two of three. Now they got stiff competition for all three. David's been blowing up like crazy. Marcus has been one of the top guys for a variety of schools across the country for a long time. And Braden Parks, there's some strong ties to Notre Dame there. So Could Notre Dame land all three? Absolutely. Could they land two out of three? No question about it. Could they go 0 for 3? That's a very realistic possibility as well. Again, relationships, money, connections, depth charts, so many factors into play. These guys all want to take a long list of spring visits, official visits. So nobody's really like itching to make a decision tomorrow. So you gotta seal the deal. Like, yes, the money's going to matter, but in the end, these guys got to see an opportunity to excel on and off the field. And these guys are all great fits at Notre Dame, which is usually a good sign.
Absolutely. I know for Fularuncho's case, like obviously there's a lot of excitement about Notre Dame over the past couple of weeks as they engage. And it felt like the Irish really surged to the forefront of that recruitment. He did add just yesterday, the other day, an Ohio State offer. I know the Buckeyes have immediately become a player in that race as well. So there's a lot to come down the line here for what's going to be the next step in these recruitments, if you will. It's not a commitment. It's going to be more visits. It's going to be expanding options, especially in his case. There's more 100%. Steps between here and the finish line. I'm kind of rounding the last couple here. We got Scott F5. Best guess on the 2027 wide receiver haul. And, you know, this is a fun one for us. We talked about it before we recorded, because unlike the last few years where it's like, oh, four or five guys, what are we looking at? It's like two, three.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting at this point. I mean, look, they – like looking at the commit list, they're still waiting, but they landed so many good ones in 26. So it's kind of hard to really like, let's like, who's going to want to like really beg to come to Notre Dame. That said, I just recently saw Quentin Burrell and he was extremely good. He's I think top 247 guy for us at 247 Sports. And look, he's not going to blow you away with his testing times and his speed, but he is one of the most complete pass catchers in America. He was so, so impressive. He did all the right things, caught a ton of balls, developed a really good connection with Trey Taylor, who's headed to Nebraska. But Quentin Burrell, I was kind of going back and watching the film that I shot and just kind of going back and forth. Like, he was making play after play, deep downfield. I mean, there's a lot to like about that kid. So that would be a huge win for Notre Dame. And they got to get that one across the finish line because they're right there in that top group. Notre Dame is battling in the top, I would say, two for Julius Jones. In my opinion, he is a guy you talk about when you're looking at one of the five best receivers in the country, in my opinion. I love this kid. And obviously Notre Dame legacy, but Oregon is a very real player in that recruitment. Like anybody who just assumes he's going to follow his dad to South Bend, like he is making his own decision and he's making an educated, calculated decision. He really likes Mike Brown, Mike Denbrock, but watch out for Oregon, man. This one's really, really close and it's very back and forth. They recently offered Cade Cooper. I'd put him in that upper tier of guys that they really like and guys that they are in a good spot with. So that's another one that likes Notre Dame a great deal. But again, don't expect like a five-man wide receiver class, but it's a good group. But now Mike Brown's going to have to get this across finish line.
Absolutely. When it comes to Jones, I would just say maybe not the news Notre Dame fans want to hear, but in addition to Oregon, keep an eye on the Miami Hurricanes, man. They're tearing it up on the recruiting trail. They just hosted him for their 305 day event. It sounds like the feedback coming out of that event has been really, really high level. The Canes are a tough one to turn down, especially when you're a local kid in Fort Lauderdale, man. So if they continue to press the right buttons along with Notre Dame and Oregon, I would just say watch out for them rising late in this one.
They got a shot. Yeah, no question Miami's real threat. Like I've always gotten the vibe that they and Florida and LSU were all playing catch up to Notre Dame and Oregon. I don't know, man. Every time I talk to Julius, he's raving about both of them, but you're right. Miami's right there in the backyard and it's hard to bet against the runner-ups for the national championship.
Absolutely. And last one here, let me grab the cap before he makes a cameo appearance. Last question here, Eastburg Irish. Any chance Keeman Spell comes to his senses?
If that means his senses, meaning Notre Dame, if that's what the implication is, I mean, look, man, he was very heavily leaning Notre Dame for a while, especially instantly after the decommitment from Penn State because of the respect or the relationships he's got with Juwan Sider. Like it all made sense for him to go to Notre Dame. But the more he kind of got around Georgia, the more he got around Kirby Smart and the entire staff there, it was kind of like, hey, who's going to jump in first, you or David Gabriel Georges? So kind of wild how it's like an embarrassment of riches that like Georgia was essentially kind of had their pick at the top two. And it's not a lock that DGG was going to go to Georgia, but Spell decided to lock up his spot. And that's a huge win for the Bulldogs. And it's a big blow for Notre Dame. So we'll see. I know he's still talking to schools and he's kicking the tires with schools like Notre Dame and Penn State and a few others, but As of right this second, he seems pretty excited about a future in Athens, but it's March. Like yeah. long way until he needs to put pen to paper and enroll. Sider's not going to give up, and he shouldn't. But you know, if they pivot and land a guy like South Carolina top 247 running back David Segarra, I'm trying to think who else.
Noah Roberts
is a big time target there. Although, again, Oregon, yeah. A few others are firmly in the mix. Like the board is like Juwan Sider is not somebody you need to bet against or just trust him a little bit. Like they're going to be fine. They're recruiting guys. They're pushing for the guys that they feel like could be potential difference makers at the next level. Wayne Shanks Jr. is another one that comes to mind. They're going to land a quality running back, if not two, this cycle. Yeah, I'm not too worried about it, but they are far from done when it comes to Kimon Spell.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think those phone calls are definitely going to be continuing all the way up until the eve of signing day. But when it comes down to it, I just look at the opportunity that he has at Georgia. And specifically, they've been looking for that star tier running back the last couple of seasons to come back in and reignite that Georgia run game at the top, right? They've had good players, but they haven't had that Todd Gurley, that game changer in a couple of years. So for Georgia, they can really sell against that. I think they have a unique opportunity in the SEC where they want to, you know, reestablish that identity. And to have a guy like Spell as sort of the, you know, the figure of that, the face of that push, I think there's a lot going for the Bulldogs to close this one out.
I agree. Yeah. But again, running back's just the last position I'm going to be worried about, fans. So don't sweat it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, that's going to take care of it for us here at Irish Illustrated Insider. Thank you for listening to both myself and Tom Loy for this recruiting special feature. They'll be back next week with the regular edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. Thanks for listening.